Welcome, guys, to the podcast. This is Actor Director Talk with Bocky and Dean.
Playback and action.
And the actors are acting in front of you. It's as if they're acting only for you.
I don't restrict their performance.
You can never tell from an actor, from a leading actor, what he's going
to
do.
Act yourself, figure out how to rehearse.
You just have to do it.
Try to not over-talk it or overthink it. Leave some mystery to happen.
Because I was an actor myself, I know what they're going for.
Hey everyone, today we're talking about casting. How to cast, how to audition, how to find your actors, what to work on when you're in the audition room. The audition technically is like a first rehearsal that you get to work with your actors. So we're going to talk about that and everything that that entails.
Cool. I'm liking this episode.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to start with basically defining what casting is? Like what is the purpose of casting and why it's fundamentally, I think it's the most important thing.
Yeah. Well, casting is one of the important elements of making a film or a theater piece or whatever you're looking to direct. Because what you want to find is you want to end up getting to a stage where you can build an ensemble cast of characters. You're not looking to just find someone to fill a role. You're looking for an actor that, you know, that you can build a relationship with. Elia Kazan said, looking for a great actor is like finding someone for a marriage, because you're going to be working with this person a lot. If you're doing like a feature film or a theater piece, and you know, you're going to go through some really hard, difficult times. So, you know, you want someone that can do the job, can work on the fly if things change or last minute, or the writer's there and they change the script the last minute. You know, you want someone that's flexible like that, that's listening and is present. Someone that has their own ideas about a project, that has their own sensibilities and their own ideas and their own way of communicating, and have basically lived a life. You want someone that just has a lot of different colors that you can use for different kinds of projects, and yeah, essentially work with them a lot. I mean, you can also just cast someone just for like one specific project, and that will happen as well. But, you know, if you can build an ensemble, like that is the dream. You know, Scorsese works with the same actors, Tarantino works with the same actors. I mean, most of your favorite directors work with the same actors. And the reason is they develop a shorthand of working together. They know the limits of each other, and the relationship just works out better in terms of creating projects. You know, you want to work with people that you like. So essentially this is the first step of getting of that relationship. And yeah, it can be very fruitful if you find the right person.
Yeah, absolutely everything. Look, the reason why Dean and I think this episode is really, really important is, even if you're not an actor's director, even if you don't know much about, you know, working with actors, I'd say from, you know, reading about, you know, a lot of great masterful directors, about 70% of your job is done if you cast well. And by casting well, it's not about casting the picture that you have in your head. So, for example, I know I've had experience because coming from the acting side of it, more often than not, when you walk into an audition, it comes down to the first impression from the director. And by first impression, they look at the quality, your energy, the way you look, the way your headshot looks. So more often than not, you're always, as a director, or when you're casting, more often than not, you're always fighting against the idea of, this is the person that I have in my head. This is the character that I have in my head. And I'm hoping that that right person walks through the door. And that's a fallacy. And the reason why it's a fallacy is because it's just a picture in your head. So the more you cling on to that idea, the more control you have over that picture and the less creative and, unconscious your process can be. And by unconscious, I mean digging in the creative wellspring of your, imagination, of your, intuition and all that stuff. So when you have somebody that walks in, try to cast on the person's ability first. I mean, if it's a specific role that you need them for, like let's say it's a specific physical role that they need to be, big or small or, literal thing, then I guess you want as many of those types as you can. But even so, use that as a secondary to cast actors, because if you have somebody that has the ability and the presence and the ability to be flexible, just like Dean said, that's the most important thing, to be flexible, to be able to go left and right at the drop of a hat, or just be a feather in the breeze, basically. That's the type of actor that you want to look for. Also from personal experience, you want, because you're working with somebody for a very long time, just like Dean said, with all these, ensemble directors and actors that have worked on so many projects, there's another reason why they work together, not only because they are right for the job or the part, it's because they get along very well. Because if you're working with a person for 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, they spark ideas in each other.
Absolutely. And they also have to have this ability to have a great attitude. And I'm not saying like a happy-go-lucky attitude. They don't have to put on this, fake persona or what it is. All they have to present is the ability to wanting to give you the best of themselves, the best product. Because at the end of the day, you're working together to get the best project. So if somebody walks through the door and they're forced to be there and you kind of feel it and you see it, stay away from that person. Unless you want to take those risks, because that person will be a lot of trouble, because technically they don't want to be on set. They don't want to be there. They want to get the job done and go home as quick as they can. And I personally wouldn't want somebody just to walk in, clock on and clock off, because at the end of the day, it shows, it translates, right? Translates.
Yeah, you want someone that's 100% committed to the project, that gets there early and leaves late. But in saying that, there is like caveats to that, when that's, there's energy expenditure and stuff like that. You don't want to burn out the actor, but you want someone that generally loves to be there, because if they do, then they will be able to generate that energy to be there. They'll feed off that energy and thrive on it, as opposed to be drained by it. So if they want to be there, being on set will actually recharge them, being in 2020 and not being able to act for over a year, I've felt like, is there something missing in my life? I don't know. And then I've done a project right after the pandemic and I'm like, oh my God, being on set is like magic. It's just the best feeling in the world. And, I'm just like, oh my God, it's just, oh, energy, people, oh my gosh. And there's nothing else like it. And, I just can't wait to do it again. And just even prepping for this podcast, just reading about auditions. I was like, I normally hate auditions, but I was like, oh man, I just want to audition again. I just want to be able to get in a room with a director and casting director. I just miss that process. I just miss everything about it.
What's that saying you always told me that Tarantino says to his crew and cast?
Oh yeah, it's basically, in order to give energy to the actors and crew on set, he'll have this mantra, and he'll say, "Why do we do this? because we love making movies.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right. And you see, he's a smart director.
You know, and then that's why we do it. You know, like that's why we do it. I was even listening to Mel Brooks. You know, and he was just like he really like he was doing TV, but he just knew that you know movies was the way. Like movies was the way to be immortal. Movies was this thing of you could really have influence on generations if you made movies as opposed to TV. So, yeah, like that's generally why we do it is to make movies, but, you know, maybe theatre's your thing. Nothing wrong with theatre. Theatre's great in its own right. But, yeah, I mean, this is why we do it is we love the work and, you know, that's what it's all about and we just love it. We're obsessed with it. We can't stop thinking about it. You know, if we're loving a movie, we love a movie, but if we think a movie's okay, then we're thinking about how to make it better or, you know, what I would have done better or, you know, how everything, you know, it's just this constant love and yeah, this is why we do it. So you want someone that has that passion and has that drive just as much as you and they can be like an equal partner. And yeah, magic can happen if you find the right person.
Yeah, that's true. Now let's talk about when you're in the room and you're looking to cast somebody and you're looking to cast somebody on their ability, what sort of things are you actually looking at from the perspective of the director?
First off, when someone comes into a room, I want to see what they bring to the table first before anything. I want to see what ideas they bring to the table. I want to see their interpretation of the material. I don't want to give any direction at all. I want to see first what kind of work they've done on the project and what they're bringing to it. Even if I've got a set idea or what I want, I want to see what they bring first. And that's the first thing.
By project, you mean the sides that you give
them? The sides, yeah.
So let's say you give them the sides a couple of days, like 2 days, 3 days before.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want them to actually do the scene? Would you want them to... How would you set it up for yourself to be able to look at the audition or look at the person to see... Or to try to find the right person for the job, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want them to make bold choices.
Right.
Is what I want to see. I want to see if they can look at the material and they can, you know, I want them to give 100%. And by 100% is I really want them to go for it and make choices, you know, like to commit to a choice. So say they have to be angry in the scene. I don't want them to be angry like they're angry at a restaurant, you know what I mean, and like have it dulled down. I want them to fully commit to what the intense, the emotion, I want them to go... 100%. And it's a hard thing to see, but if you look at a lot of actors, the great ones, they go for it. They really just go for it without any fear. If you're getting an actor that is fearful of trying to be right, of trying to nail it, it's always a recipe for disaster.
So that idea of taking risks.
Yeah.
That's important what you're bringing up. So what I'm hearing is pretty much taking risks, being vulnerable and self-conscious. I mean, self-conscious is the biggest thing.
Even if you're wrong, I want you to go like even if the actor's wrong, I want them to go 100% in the wrong direction. I don't want them to go, I think I'm kind of going in the wrong direction. The director's looking at me funny. Oh, no. Okay, maybe I'll tone it down. I heard a lot of other actors go really angry, and then I heard the director say, no, I don't want that, and that's what I've overheard, so I'm going to, like, dull it down a little bit. You know, I want the actor to just go, you know, like it's life and death. Just like they make a choice and they go, I'm going this way, whether it's right or wrong, and I'm putting the pedal all the way down and let's see what happens. Because, you know, like that's what I want to see. You know, like we're not here to recreate life, you know, like film. I mean, let's talk about film. Is like film, I want to, you know, we want to capture a dream, you know, like that life is a dream and like it's sometimes exaggerated or like just that, you know, it's an interpretation of life. Yes. It isn't life. It's an interpretation of life and a collection of ideas of what life is. So
have you heard that quote of Kubrick talk about what filmmaking is?
Yeah, I have.
It's for people who haven't heard it, he defines film storytelling as a photograph of life. It's not life, but it's a photograph of a photograph of life. That's how he defined it. It's a photograph of a photograph of life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it should be looked at. But let's talk about because you've had experience in auditions and castings and that, being an actor. Let's talk about all the pitfalls that a lot of directors, especially first-time directors, kind of jump into. All the pitfalls, kind of mistakes, and right off the bat.
First thing off the bat, the worst thing. I mean, this is me. This is my personal thing. But, you know, I've heard other actors like the other way. But generally when I'm going to an audition, I'm thinking about the scene that I'm going to work on. I'm thinking about the work that I'm going to bring to the table. And generally, you know, before I'm walking to the audition, I'm working on the piece. When I'm signing in, I'm thinking about the piece. When I'm waiting to get up into the room, I'm going over the material. I'm thinking about the piece. I'm going. So then when I walk into a casting with a director or a casting director, and they go, oh, let's just sit down and let's talk about life, and let's talk about like who you are as a person and an actor, and who are you, what are you doing, you know, if you're talking about the work before I get to do the work that I've prepared, like it just throws me off, because then like I'm warming up this engine to do a performance, and then you're shutting off the engine cold turkey, and then I have to be myself, and then I got to turn it back on to do the performance. Like I just want to get in, I want to do my performance, and then we can chat all day after, you know. But when I first walk in the door, generally I want to do my work, and then I want to have a chat after. But if I have to chat first, it's a major buzzkill. And I think, you know, like when you go into a casting office, generally you'll have to fill in like all these details about yourself, like your measurements, clothing, who your agent is, all your personal details. Like they should have on that form, do you want to talk first or do you want to do the scene first? You know, I think if you had like one of those boxes on the form where you could tick and say, this is what I want to do first, I think it would save like a lot of headaches.
That's a very good point. I actually like that idea.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Because you might like feel comfortable, like there's actors that actually feel comfortable like talking first and want to just like know who they're acting for, or they just want to like calm their nerves by talking to someone. Like there's those actors too. But for me, like most of the people I know, like, no, we want to do our work first and then talk later. So if you're a casting director or, you know, your director, like ask your actors first what they want to do and do that first. And let them do the work, let them bring their choices first, and then after that, then you can talk and we can play and then we can do all kinds of fun stuff together. But first, let, you know, personal preference, like let them do their work first, please.
Yeah. See, what What really gets to me is when you get there, and I've heard this from a lot of different, because you and I know a lot of actors, and I've heard this from a lot of different actors. They've had the same or similar experiences to getting in the audition and basically not getting enough, if the director's there, not having the ability to see what the director wants once he gives them the direction. Does that make sense? More often than not, what I've heard a lot of actors say is a lot of directors just want them to run the scene over and over again.
Yeah.
Run it, try it a little bit, you know, louder, a little bit softer. When from the director's perspective, this is all I see, right? This is all I see. From the director's perspective, if they are doing that, they're only trying to find the person that can basically say those lines the way you're picturing it in your head.
Yeah, result direction.
Or see it in a way where you've already made your decision, but you're basically waiting on a production line to have the right person fit those boots, rather than having somebody that's maybe not the same type. It doesn't fit the same description or the same quality. And I can give you two examples. Tom Cruise in Rain Man. You know about the story?
No.
So apparently Rain Man, the film, Tom Cruise's character was originally written in the script as an older man.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, he was written as an older man. Then when he auditioned, you know, they loved that idea between the two characters. Same as Marlon Brando's character in Tennessee Williams' A Streetcar Named Desire. That character in Tennessee Williams's play was written as an older man, an older slovenly, you know, drunkard, not a young, you know, virile, sexualized man.
Wow.
Totally opposite to what the quality was.
Yeah.
But when those actors came in and they brought something special to it, the directors and the writers saw something that could add more to the production rather than go, he's not right for it because he doesn't look the part or he doesn't bring in the right quality. Rather, these actors came in, they blew them away with their ability, with what they brought to it. And there's plenty of other roles. There's plenty of other instances where, you know, actors have come in and the directors were open enough to see them in certain roles. I mean, Robert De Niro, when he auditioned for Francis Ford Coppola for The Godfather, he originally auditioned for
Sonny. Yeah.
Right? And then Francis Ford Coppola loved what he did, that he wanted him for another role. So he was open enough to go, okay, maybe this guy is not right for this, but I still see a lot of quality. I still see a lot of potential that I want to put him in something else. So having that ability to kind of stray away from your concept in your head and the idea of let's just run the scene. And that's what I hear a million times. And I've heard it from other actors. Okay, let's just run the scene. Let's just take it from the top. You've got your script there. You've got your script. Let's go from the top. Let's run the lines. And that's fine. Look, auditions are not performances, but and you should have a script in hand if you are going off sides. But if the director is only doing that, all I see is the director doesn't know what he's looking for in terms of casting. He's not looking for whether the actor has the ability, whether the actor has the psychology for it, whether he has certain qualities for it, or whether he has, certain enthusiasm and ability to stick with the project. And most often than not, it's that little chat that they have at the start or the end that's useless. And by useless, I mean, can you just tell us something about yourself?
Yeah.
And that is possibly the worst thing you can do, because most actors are very introverted and shy people. They're good actors, the best of them are usually very reserved. And, you know, getting to know them, I understand is a very good thing because you're trying to build this relationship with the actor. But putting them on the spot in that sense, telling them about themselves, it would be a better idea to actually open up to them yourself as a director, because building that relationship is a two-way street. And if you're just throwing it on them to say, oh, tell me something about yourself because I'm judging you on this, that's how actors are looking at it. Am I saying the right thing? Will they like me because of that? Because all auditions are based on, oh, is he going to like me? Is he not going to like me? You know, and that's unfortunate because you have to get past that and you have to look past that with actors, right? As they walk in, and if it's a thing of I'm trying to please daddy director or the casting director, then, you know, it might not be the fault of the actor because they might have a lot of talent underneath that wellspring. But it's up to you to try to get, you know, if you see something in them, it's up to you to try to kind of let those reins go, to let them, like Dean said, to let them go loose. And if they can't, then that's the barrier that you can't work with, and maybe this person isn't right for the role.
Yeah, well, there's some actors that are, you know, aren't great auditioners, and some are great performers and not great auditioners, and there's some actors that are great auditioners and they're not great performers. And what you want to do is you want to treat an audition like a rehearsal, like a workspace, as opposed to a performance, to see what they can bring to the table, how flexible they are. Because here's the thing, you know, when you're doing an audition, it could be like, you know, you're doing an audition at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and you're going to get a 1 o'clock in the afternoon performance. Maybe it's just after lunch, they're feeling a bit groggy, blah, 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 you know, like they're you know, they've got some food in them, they're feeling a bit low energy because they're full of food. But, you know, when you film this scene on set, you may be doing it at 5 o'clock in the morning. You may be doing it at 2 o'clock at night. You may be doing it at, you know, 6 o'clock at dinner time. You know, like, you don't know when you're going to be shooting this thing. So they're going to have a different energy, a different vibe. And you want the actor to be able to give you different things at different times, depending on, you know, maybe the weather's changed and you've got to change the scene or the set, or an actor can't come in, so there's no actor to work opposite. So you're gonna shoot something else instead, or a set hasn't worked or a costume hasn't worked, so you have had to recalibrate the scene. You want an actor that's just malleable, flexible, and that can bring different things to the table. Because if, let's say, you do like a line reading, or like you do the scene and it's exactly the same, and then you get them to read it again and it's exactly the same, and you change, you know, like maybe you don't get the reader to read the scene opposite, you yourself read and it's exactly the same. That means that whatever you change or whatever happens, they're going to give that exact same performance.
Don't cast those people.
That is a terrible, horrible mistake. And because this is why you want to find those malleable, flexible people, because things will change, emotions will change. Like Tarantino says, you know, if you run over a dog on the way to set, he wants to see that, you know, in your character. If life happens to you on the way, he wants to see that. So you want someone that's living life and that will react to what he's given on the day.
Yeah, because that what Dean just said gives a perfect example of what listening is. If the reader opposite, and I suggest that reader should be an actor opposite that person that's auditioning, and the reason why you do that is they're usually going to bring in something different, or you can give them, the reader, a different, you know, adjustment or a different way to play it. in order to see the person auditioning, to see whether they're capable of adjusting to that person. And that's the best way of actually seeing whether that person is listening or not. As Dean said, if the person is reacting to, you know, whether, you know, the reader is doing it one way or another way, then that person is truly listening. And that's something that is like the number one thing to look at when you're auditioning somebody.
Yeah. And a good way to test the actors that you're casting is maybe you don't have to give the actor that's auditioning notes on direction. You give the reader direction.
You give them the adjustment.
You give them the adjustment, and then they will read it differently. And then if the actor reacts differently to the reading, then you've got an actor that listens.
So I did a casting once. I just remembered a story. I did a casting once where we were trying to find, for a short film, we were trying to find an actress that had, you know, two types of abilities. The first ability was, can they be given enough time to work on a piece and come up with their own choices, with their own ideas, with whatever they could come up with, you know, and work on that for a period of time, then bring it in. And number two was, can they be given something on the spot and actually be creative enough to go with whatever's given, right? And we did it in those two different ways because if an actor is able to do both, they're able to be, you know, a very dynamic actor. And that's something that is, you know, of primary importance. So what we did was we gave each of the actresses about 2 weeks to prepare a 2-minute monologue of their own choosing, a contemporary monologue, which they were going to present to us. And then the second piece, we told them that on the day we were going to give them, 2 weeks before that, we gave them the sides. Or sorry, a week before that, we gave them the sides. And we told them, okay, we want you to do that on the day. So when it came to having the auditions on the day, what our thought was we got them to do the monologue that they prepared. So a lot of the, you know, a lot of the women, they brought on different choices, and we saw their ability to see how much work they can put in given whatever time they needed. They could have worked on that monologue for years, who knows. And then on the day, instead of going with the sides that we gave them the week before, we thought, we're going to give them on the day, we're going to give them a short scene from a play called Dumb Waiter. And Dumb Waiter is a two-hander play with, it's about two hitmen that are waiting, you know, for this hit, right? And we gave them a short scene from that, and we said, you're not going to do the sides. We're going to give you, you know, while you're waiting, we're going to give you 15, 20 minutes, you know, see what you can make from this, right? The people that knew what the play was, right in their minds, that they would have thought, hang on, this is a two-man play. We're all women, right? Second thing was, if they didn't know what it was, they had to make sense of it from what was going on. So when the women would come in, we would see them having the ability to prepare something over a long period of time, and also given that script on the day, which was a great, great way to do it, because you realize some actors can do one really, really well and then be a miss on the other. And that's okay. That's okay. But when you find an actor that can do both, that is an actor that you should take note. Even if they're not right for your project, build some rapport with them. You know, if you get along with them, keep their credentials down, and then, you know, work with them on something else, because that actor has the capability and the dynamic range to be able to, you know, do whatever.
Yeah. Apparently, Pacino is very good, would be very good at that. He'd be very good at getting that dumb waiter 15 minutes. and be able to do like an amazing performance from that 15 minutes. And while someone like De Niro would struggle with that, apparently De Niro needs like a lot of preparation and research in order to do that. So, you know, someone like De Niro would struggle with getting the dumb waiter 15 minutes.
And they're both great actors, but look, it's just if you put it in that format, you'll quickly find out what type of actor you're working with, right? You'll quickly find out whether they can make choices for, you know, a lengthy period of time, or they can work on the spot, or they can do both. So at least you understand where that actor is coming from and you would know how to approach them.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to do something else where they're not comfortable with it. Like if you were trying to give De Niro, you know, something that Pacino could do on the spot, well, don't play to their weaknesses, play to their strengths. So if you were working with him, you know, and you auditioned him that way, you would know, okay, you know, I think I can work more this way with him rather than that way.
Yeah. Yeah, this would be a great way for film casting, theater casting, you know, like you're not going to have new material unless you're creating a play. You know, like it's your play, you've written a play and you're doing it, then, you know, this way of working of casting would work. But if you're doing like a classic text like Shakespeare or Tennessee Williams, then, you know, getting dumb waiter 15 minutes may not be the best method. And all these ideas that we're giving you, you know, some of them work really well for certain projects and others don't, but there are definitely fundamentals of all auditioning.
Well, the idea behind that is not actually to see whether they can do the piece. It's to see where their ability to do the piece lies, to see where their muscles are at. It's not to see how, you know, how much of it they can do. It's just to see, you know, what capability they have and how much you'd be able to push them. Because look, you can have one actor that's really good, you know, in one thing, like you said with Robert De Niro, him preparing for a while and having to kind of work on it for a while to bring it in, and then having Pacino do stuff on the spot. They're both great actors, right? But it's knowing where their range lies, knowing how to kind of, if you do cast that person, knowing how to work within that range to play to their strengths. So you can do it on the basis of theater, film, television, on anything, because casting at its core, the most important thing with casting, what everybody misses is you're looking at the fundamental ability. It's not just whether they're right or they're wrong, or they're a good actor or they're a bad actor. It's looking at their ability, meaning ability to be flexible, ability to you know, get the job done, you know, ability to, you know, communicate and have all those things encompass understanding for a little bit of the story. But I think at the forefront, even if they don't fully get the scene, but they have the ability to do so, whether they're, you know, have certain qualities. And this is a very very nuanced thing, but I think it's very, very important, because 70% is casting. And if you cast the right person, like even if it's based on a gut feeling, could lead you down a really, really good place, like a really good project. Even if you don't know anything about directing actors or whatever it is, and they have the capability, then your job is 70% done. But that being said, if you don't know what you're looking for, and this is what most directors don't, most directors that come in to auditions, and this just pisses me off, they come in, and these days most auditions are either self-tapes. You know, you have the self-tape and sometimes a callback. All they do is run the scene, run it, try to do it with a bit more energy, a bit less energy. Can you be more angry on that? Result shit, right? And what really frustrates me is when I see directors asking for self-tapes of the sides that they give the actors. And then for the callbacks, you're doing the exact same sides again.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. So what that tells me is, fundamentally, they're just looking to see whether that person can be a puppet to be able to hit the lines, say the lines, the way you actually wrote them. And that's a big problem as well, because more often than not, and this is known throughout, you know, the best directors, that even if a great actor comes up with an idea in the audition, if the director is there or the writer is there, they have the capability to see that if the actor came up with something better, they'll change the script. You know, and Tarantino, do you know about this story? Do you know about Tarantino and Inglourious Basterds? For his audition process, because he auditions all his actors, like all his main and supporting actors. He likes to be there in person.
Hmm.
He doesn't tape it. He likes to come in and he reads with a lot of his actors. And for Inglourious Basterds, he did the same. And I can't remember the actor's name. It was one of the supporting guys. Apologize, I can't remember his name. But he talks about how, you know, he's known of Tarantino, and Tarantino has seen him in like the late 80s and 90s in some TV shows he's done, and he wanted him to come and audition. And they knew each other. They met each other, you know, a little bit here and there. But this actor talks about the story when he came in to audition for him. He walked in and he just saw Tarantino there by himself, right? And he says, you know, we worked on a scene. And I'm saying worked on a scene because this is what he said. They said, we worked on, you know, a scene for like 40 minutes. And Tarantino was playing all the characters. And he was like, let's try this. Let's do this. Let's try this. Let's, you know, he was being flexible to see where his script is kind of sitting at. He wasn't just saying, okay, let's take it from the top.
You got the line wrong. Can you do it again?
Absolutely. And that's the biggest problem, because all this just tells me that directors or casting people are just already made up their mind on what they see, a picture in their head. Get that picture out of your head. Get that picture out of your head, because what somebody brings in, what, you know, you have as Tom Cruise or Brando or Pacino, or, you know, all these actors that have come up with something, you know, themselves, has made that piece a lot better. You know, all these actors that I just named, they became who they were because those directors took a chance with them. You know, Francis Ford Coppola took a chance with Pacino when nobody wanted Pacino. They looked at him for all the self-tapes and they said, this guy's not doing anything. He seems boring. He doesn't look like a leading man. That's what they said to him.
Mm.
Let's get Robert Redford.
Yeah.
He looks more like a leading man. So they, you know, the producers were already looking for a type. They were looking for a quality. They already had the pictures in their head. Whereas Coppola said, no, no, no. I have a feeling about this kid, right? So he kept pushing him to come back for the callbacks, to keep doing it different ways. And he kept sneaking him in. And finally, you know, he actually got him to do the project. The producers gave up.
Oh, but even then, like he got cast, but he was still on the chopping block.
Absolutely.
It wasn't until he showed the scene of him doing his first kill in the restaurant, and they went, oh shit, this, okay, he's good. Okay, we can keep him. But it wasn't until then that they got off his back.
And it takes a great director to see what it was about him, like what it was that he's looking for. He's not only looking for a type or quality. He's looking for a lot of nuanced things in the actor. He's looking whether they have a certain presence, you know, whether somebody's home. In, you know, you see that in the eyes a lot. We talked about that before. You see it in their eyes, whether they're, you know, their eyes are either glazed over or not, whether they're punctuating all their lines or not. Because more often than not, if the actors come in, you want them to read sides, you know, you've already determined in your head, you've determined in this piece that the way you've structured these sentences, or this dialogue, is the way that it should be said. But in life, see, I'm talking to you. I'm not even thinking about punctuation. I don't know when I'm going to stop. I don't know when I'm going to, you know, pause or whatever it is. That's a big pitfall that most directors get hung up on.
Yeah. You know, and that's with Christopher Walken. He has a secretary that he'll get all the scripts, and he has a secretary that will retype the script and get rid of all the punctuation.
There you go.
And that's why Christopher Walken sounds the way that Christopher Walken sounds, is because he's working on a script with zero punctuation, and he finds it in the moment as opposed to where it's dictated in the script.
So having said that, when you get an actor to walk in and, you know, do this piece for you, yes, you can get them to do the sides. I'm not saying, you know, there's all these rules for casting and on auditions, but know what you're actually looking for. Know what at what stage the actor's at to be able to do the piece that you need them to do. Do they have that ability to do it? And once again, the most fundamental thing, are they listening? Not hearing. Most people think listening is hearing. I hate that word, listening. You know, I wish I could change it to say subtexting, you know, because our listening is only 5%, even less, in communication. 95% is nonverbal. Mm. So when I say listening, are you actually there? You know, are you actually taking in what's being said to you? And that goes back to, and if you can take one thing from this podcast, it's get the reader, if you are going with the sides, if you are going to play the scene as it is, get the reader off camera to give different performances and then see if that actor adjusts. But get the reader to be an actor, because the worst thing you can do, I mean, sometimes it can play to your benefit, because, you know, a great actor should be able to play the scene even when somebody's just delivering the lines to them. But if you can get an actor to sit off camera and to give different performances, different ways of doing it, and if that actor on screen auditioning can adjust. By adjust, I mean, are they really responding to what's going on? Are they really doing the thing that they're supposed to be doing? You know, and it could be, I hate using the term playing opposites, but it's a very good tool, especially for auditioning. Getting them to do, if it's a piece about, you know, if it's a very sad emotional event that you're getting the sides, that you're giving the sides for, most actors will prepare for that, bring in that moment, bring in that part of it. If you can get them to play it as an opposite within the guise of getting the reader to do it a different way, then, you know, if you can get, I don't know what I was going to say. If you can get them to play an opposite, and by opposite, I mean the reader off screen, to play it as the scene is a happy scene, you know, or give them adjustment to, I don't know, in whatever terms, to change the mood of the scene. And if that actor on screen that's auditioning is still playing their own emotions and not really responding and going off with what that actor's bringing in, then I suggest don't cast that person, because fundamentally all acting on the basis should be about great listening and ensemble, which Dean did mention. The biggest thing you are casting for is relationships. Unless it's a film where this person is by themselves, where they're spending the whole entirety of the film by themselves, then I guess that's permission to, you know, to look otherwise. But most, if not all, films are based on the ability to cast on relationships. By relationships, I mean, how did these two people fit in together? You know, they might not always fit in together. Like, hypothetically, if you have a lead that you've already cast and, you know, you've worked with them before, whatever it is, you want to try cast around that person and see how all the other characters actually fit in as, you know, as one unit, as one ensemble, because that brings out great performances, right? Yeah. And that's what Coppola did with Godfather. He cast all actors based on the ability to, and he did this. He sat them all down. They went to an Italian restaurant and they hung out and they had dinner together. And I think they did a reading, and he was paying close attention to how they kind of fit in with each other. And by fit in, I don't mean like logistically. I mean, you look at it in terms of, you look at it in terms of emotionally, how do these people relate to one another? How do they, what essence do they bring out of each other?
Yeah. And that's what you want to do. Like as a callback is you want to then put the different actors together and have them read or do the scene opposite each other and see what that brings to the table. And that's why you do callbacks, is to explore the scene but with the actual actors that you've found in the first audition process.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and if you can get the lead to be there, if you've already cast, you know, the lead and the supporting, and you're trying to cast around them, get them to be in the audition and to see how they fit, like Dean said, see how they fit in with each other, and see where, you know, where you can kind of play around the written scene. So if it's a scene about two friends in a coffee shop and there's a certain event that they're talking about, then in the callback, let's say in the first self-tape that they sent you, you really liked it, you wanted to get that actor or actress to come in the callback, instead of running that scene again, why not take an element or an event that they're talking about in that little coffee shop scene and improvise that element outside of it to see how they react on the fly, on the moment. And if you can get that lead actor to come there to see how they kind of gel and work together, you know, because the worst thing you can also do is, and this will happen, that you cast two people that you really like, two actors that you really like, they're supposed to be lovers, but they hate each other. And unfortunately, sometimes you might have to deal with that. If you're in a professional environment and the producers want you to cast a certain name where you have to work with, you know, a certain name, so they bring in the money, they bring in bums on seats, well, you're just going to have to work around them. And if it's two actors where they don't get along and you have to cast both of them, you have to make it work. It's not the best working environment, but if they're good enough actors, they will make it work. But it's about letting all that guard down, letting all that, you know, seeing how the relationship between all these actors can flower and grow, rather than building more kind of walls and treating it as like, I'm coming in here just to do a job, I don't want to see that person, I don't want, you know, having that kind of negative energy really, really fucks with you. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, speaking of like getting to know your actors and stuff. Like Kazan will, for his casting, if he's got an idea, like a gut feeling that this actor might be good for the project, instead of auditioning, he'll go for like a long walk with him and ask about their life and their feelings about marriage and politics and family and stuff like that, to kind of get the essences and, you know, what they could bring to the character and the triggers that he could use in direction of where to push a certain actor to deliver a performance, or you'll take him out to dinner. So, I mean, that's another way of casting, is to find out if they have, like he did like this guy where he directed this play, and there's a guy that's like feeling guilt, like a lot of guilt, and he found this actor that was a alcoholic, who was a recovering alcoholic, and he felt this guilt for being an alcoholic. He felt a lot of shame and guilt for like all the burden that he put on his friends and family. That alcoholic aspect of it wasn't in the play, but it had that color, that essence, or that experience was similar to what was in the play. So he cast that actor because he knew what that guilt actually meant.
Yeah. So you got to know the essence of the character that you're looking for based on the script.
Yeah, absolutely. And he wanted like people that would, he said, never cast someone that has a negative quality. You want an actor to have like a thirst or a thriving for life, because that's very hard to act. You know, if it's a dead part, like an actor can act a dead part, but if they're dead inside and they have to act alive, that's very hard to be believable on screen or on camera. So he always says, look for someone that has a thirst and love for life, because then when they're playing the scene and they're depressed and they're trying to get out of the hole that they're in, they're pushing for something. They have that drive to do that. But if they're already feeling depressed and miserable, and then you're like, okay, now you got to play depressed and miserable. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, now you love life. You know, they're going to be like, what's to live for? I don't really care about life. It's hard to get that actor to go to that place. But if they're already at that place, it's going to be a lot easier. You're going to have someone that's a lot easier to work with.
Yeah. I also just remembered that, you know, there's another avenue to casting, and that's based on, writing for people you would already feel they'd be good for the role.
Hmm.
So, you know, Darren Aronofsky did The Wrestler, and he thought of Mickey Rourke straight away. Nobody wanted to touch Mickey Rourke, but based on you know, Mickey Rourke and who he was and all the experiences he went through in his life, he said there's nobody else that can do this role. And Mickey Rourke actually felt that as well. You know, he said that himself, that when they ended up, you know, doing certain scenes, Mickey Rourke said, you know, this is quite personal. I don't think it would go this way. It seems too Hollywood. Do you know what I mean? So they changed it based on his sort of experiences. And Darren Aronofsky knew that Mickey Rourke could go there because he cast well based on that quality that he already brought to that character, you know. And it could be something as simple as, you know, you've seen an actor do something in a different film or a play or whatever it was, you saw them in something and you saw a certain quality. It might not necessarily mean you're going to give them the same type, because I know for a fact that Paul Thomas Anderson, when he cast people like Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, you know, he saw something in Adam Sandler that other people didn't, you know, because that's one of, you know, his greater dramatic roles, such as the Safdie brothers as well in Uncut Gems. they saw something in Sandler that, you know, it was very, it wasn't evident from his past performances, because all he did was comedy. All he did was these, you know, comedic roles. But, you know, if they watched it and they saw something else, then they, you know, gave themselves the permission to write that film, to write that part for that actor, you know. And, you know, the great directors have known to actually do that. They've known to look at certain stars or have certain people in their minds. I know, like I said, Paul Thomas Anderson, when he wrote There Will Be Blood, he only had Daniel Day-Lewis in mind. He said, I had him in my head when I was writing the whole time. And if he was going to say no, I didn't know how I was going to do it. Meaning that, you know, it helped him overcome some ideas of, you know, who to cast and how to play this character when he had faith in that actor. Meaning that Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, he's played, you know, not similar roles, but he's had certain qualities that he brought out in past performances, like
Gangs
of New York. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. He's brought out certain elements which Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, saw it in him, because I believe he watched Gangs of New York, and don't quote me on this, but I think it was, he said it was just the little things that he was doing that really impressed him, like the opening scene when he comes out. And he's just, you know, he's just looking around, and there's a shot of him just treading on the snow, and he's kind of treading his foot in the snow. And he said that's just those little things, you know, just really impressed him. But he saw something in that performance that, you know, he managed to write something not similar, but kind of in the guise of, he knew that Daniel Day-Lewis could go to that place. Once again, we go to the ability. He saw the ability of him being able to be that flexible of an actor. Because then you had him, you know, do The Age of Innocence, which he plays a totally different range, you know, which as an actor, you know, playing all these different characters and these different ranges gives you more work, you know. All actors strive to play as many characters as they can, because A, they don't have a boring career, and B, they can get more work, right? But playing them well is a different thing. And then having a director and their ability to see that they have that essence or that quality or that ability to go even further or take it back, I think is the best lesson to kind of to take.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you get the actors to come in and audition for you, and you feel like they have the ability to, you know, execute, they're vulnerable, they can take direction, they bring in their own imagination, their own choices, but you're not so sure about whether they have the quality to marry themselves to that character. Is there a way which you can kind of bypass that, or is there a way where you can kind of identify that within them? Does that make sense?
I guess that's getting to know the actor, or like not talking about like, oh, like tell us about yourself or what we said before, or you know, or what do you do with yourself? Just ask, like, just talking about the actual work. And their ideas of the work, and maybe relating to the work in a personal way that relates to you, and then see if the actor feels the same way, or
they're excited about the project.
Yeah, they're excited about the project, but they just have that kind of feeling of like, oh yeah, like I've definitely experienced this before, or I've seen this in my uncle or my auntie, or they've got some personal connection or experience,
right,
to the story. So I guess I'd find that out from the actor, if they've got that kind of personal stake or connection in telling this story.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to
literal. It doesn't have to be a literal thing, but just has that kind of parallel of like, this story means something to me. That's why I'm excited to do it. Not that I'm excited to do it because it's work or that it pays very well. It's that excitement of there's a reason I need to tell this story. There's something in me. There's a color in me. There's an essence in me where I've felt this. I want to communicate this idea, but I don't know how to say it. I don't know how to communicate and tell others without sounding preachy or, there's a way I don't know how to communicate this. But this is why we tell art. We tell art to communicate our feelings in a non-logical way. So that's what I would want to find from the actor is, do they have this desire to tell that story about themselves and be personal, but in a fictional way?
I agree. Let's just end it on this.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Good chatting to you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
See you guys next week.
See ya.
Thanks, guys, for listening to the show. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to our channel. Links in the description below. We're also on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We also have an email, which you can contact us at talk@actordirectortalk.com. Thank you.